The gurus of how to are here, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. They visit us once a month, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. By the way, they're not brothers.
No.
I guess people continue. They have merged you and Click and Clack.
It's a possibility.
Yes. I mean, you remember that story I told where I was on vacation and somehow radio came up and I said, oh, I'm a big fan of WNYC. And he said, well, I'm on the Leonard Lopate show. I do the home repair stuff. And he goes, oh, you guys are great. But where do you come up with all the stories about the cars?
And, well, many people have also called you the Ubell brothers. There were any number of Ubell brothers who became famous.
There was a bunch of four of us. Mm-hmm. It's a gaggle of four.
Including a couple in the media. Mm-hmm. But Alvin and Lawrence are father and son, and I'm hard-pressed to know which one of you knows more. Maybe the both of you know an equal amount about everything.
We have our different disciplines.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I know, that's why I said it.
Well, I'm alive a longer time than he is. So
really?
So I live through more trauma than he has.
You look older than he does, too.
And the thing in almost every business, experience is an excuse for one's mistakes.
Well, over your lifetime, you've seen a lot of snowstorms. In fact, so have you,
so
Larry.
So have we, yeah.
It's snowing like mad right now. We are in a studio where we actually can look out the window and I can just see how heavily it's coming down.
It actually looks like locusts, the way it's coming down right now. It's coming down in those large, almost snowball type. But I remember when the media would say, oh, it's a little bit of snow, and it came out 2 feet in Brooklyn. I mean,
I also remember when I was a kid never having a snow day, ever.
Yes.
I mean, never would we. It would be 4 feet of snow out there. And it's, schools are open. Here, a day before, they think they're going to have snow. Schools are closed.
When I was a kid, we used to have to walk to school.
When did
we used
that
to have to
happen?
Walk to school barefoot in the snow.
And uphill, both ways.
He's telling us he was a kid. You know, I don't believe that he was ever a kid. Come on.
You suggest that you should not use salt on newly paved walkways and driveways.
Yeah, that's I thought it was appropriate because of the snow that's coming down, and everybody's using salt on their driveways. You got to be very careful about that. They're good melting devices, but if your driveway happens to, or your walkway, sidewalk, happens to be only about less than 90 days old, you're looking for trouble. You're looking for the surface of that concrete to start spalling off and deteriorating the concrete. People have to understand that what concrete is really a chemical reaction between what they call crystallization action between water and the cement. And that sometimes could take up to 2 to 3 years until finally reaching its maximum crystallization. When you put
salt
on
it. But it gets rained on and snowed on.
No, rain is great because that extends the crystallization action. But when you put salt on it, that gives it a different thing, and you're gonna actually stifle the crystallization action.
In other words, the chemical reaction between the salt and the Portland cement is almost ceased at that point, and it stops, and it actually causes erosion of the surface.
And the salt also hurts your dog's paws.
If one would have a dog, of
well,
which I don't,
and many people do. Is there an alternative?
The calcium chloride I like a little bit better than the salt. Because
is it more expensive? Is that
it is more expensive. It is more expensive. But the problem with salt is that many of the concrete driveways and sidewalks, they put reinforced wire or bars into them. And by adding salt to it at this point in the life of the concrete will actually cause the rebars or the reinforcement bars to oxidize at an earlier stage than it's supposed to.
The other thing that, getting back to the animal issue, yes, but both salt and calcium chloride are going to cause damage to your dog's paws. So when you're taking them out in the snow, I know this sounds a little, you know, wimpy, but definitely you should put boots on your animals and definitely clean off the paws when you come in. Don't make a joke about it.
No.
We're going to get way too many letters from animal lovers.
We have to clear that with Alex. See, that's what...
Inside joke.
Inside joke. Alex is my...
No more inside.
Alex is my granddaughter, and she's studying to be a veterinarian.
Thinking about the snow a little further, people are shoveling snow like mad. Of course, that's always dangerous for your back, for your other conditions. But we have no choice in the matter, do we?
Well, I'm 76 years old, and I still go out and shovel the snow. But I know myself. I go out and I shovel it a little bit, and I go in and I relax until I get, and I go out and shovel a little bit more. I will not shovel an entire driveway and so in one shot. I do it piecemeal.
Now, also, this is a time when people light their, if they have fireplaces, they light their fires.
But just one last thing about the shoveling is that they make devices. They make shovels that are friendlier toward your back so you don't have to dip down so deep. And also they make electric snow blowers, which you could plug in and actually help in the process. As far as the fireplaces are concerned, just because it's snowing out, you shouldn't just become all fireplace friendly and start using your fireplace because you haven't used it in a while. You can cause a chimney fire from the buildup of the creosote inside the chimney, and sometimes things die inside your chimney, and by starting a fire, that will start to burn and start inside the fireplace also.
What about the snow going down the chimney?
That's not a problem. The amount of snow that's going to fall down a fireplace is very limited, and most people these days also have chimney hoods on or chimney caps on that prevent animals.
It makes it hard for Santa Claus to get down those chimneys.
I know.
Oh, yeah, that poor Santa Claus.
I know, it's so rough.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something about fireplaces, and that is a major cause of energy loss, leaving the damper open on your fireplace. That actually, if you leave the damper open on the fireplace, that's a natural vector that is sucking the heat right out of your building. And also those people who think that they're going to have a fireplace, they're going to put extra heat into the building, they're mistaken. Actually, a fireplace only provides what they call radiant heat. The actual flame throws heat in one direction, but actually it draws more heat out of the building than puts into the building.
It's so nice to look at them, and they smell so great.
But if you're actually thinking of wanting to use a wood-burning appliance that will put heat into the building, one would be a wood-burning stove. Those actually do put more heat in, but if you're going to put one in, make sure you follow manufacturer specifications on how to install these devices, because what happens if you install it too close to a wall, you can cause a fire inside the wall.
And if you're in the city of New York and you're going to put a potbelly stove in your house, you got to file it with the buildings department.
This is the Leonard Lopez Show on WNYC, WNYC.org. My guests are Al and Larry Ubell, the gurus of how-to, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And along the lines of our first conversation, for the first thing we talked about with salt, Vic from the Upper West Side asks, when buildings are under construction in the winter during freezing weather, how can they pour the concrete?
Well, there's different new kinds of concrete around there. Well, actually, not that new. It's called high and early, which is a concrete that has chemicals in it that accelerate the curing of the concrete, but also permits it to have full crystallization. They can add certain types of antifreeze to the concrete while pouring it. But the optimum condition is to keep the temperature around the pouring of concrete below the freezing temperature. And they do this inside of construction jobs with special heaters that are put into the areas, and they enclose them off. If you ever see the construction jobs now, they have big screens around the building, blankets that they put around the building, because they're putting smudge pots inside the building in order to keep the building warm the concrete cures.
And I always thought it was because they were growing oranges in there.
It's a possibility.
And now Raul from Brooklyn just redid the front and steps of his brownstone. Wants to know if salt is bad for the stucco.
Yes, absolutely. Any type of material that has Portland cement in it and is going to cause a problem with that. There was one interesting thing that I came across yesterday, where a client of mine had a house where right next door, a driveway away, there's an apartment building, and that apartment building side facade started falling apart. And they brought, and unfortunately now there's sort of a lawsuit going on, but they came on and said, we need to fix this, you need to let us on your property. And they've set up scaffolding. The scaffolding was sitting there for 3 months. She lost use of her driveway and everything and was not compensated for this. And the reality is, if people come to you and you have property adjacent to someone else, they say, we need to come on your property. And they say, no, you don't. And if they start to browbeat you, call 911. Call the police. Get the police involved. You make the phone call. Only the fire department and the health department are allowed to come onto your property without a court order. On the other hand, if they're going to come on and do this work, they should compensate you. Compensate you for loss of your driveway. Compensate for loss of your garden. Compensate
or your
you.
Deck. I
yes.
Have that problem.
Now you can't. Now, unfortunately, you cannot be unreasonable. Say you never can come on. The building department will overrule you. But if you're reasonable and you get a reasonable compensation, you have to let them on, but you should be compensated.
Now, before we go to the calls, and we're getting quite a few,
mm-hmm.
we have this radio word game.
Is that what you want to call it? I call it a radio word torture.
We have had any number in the past where the first person who called had the answer. This one has been 3 months now.
This will be the third month.
And I think that if people don't get this one, this is really hard. If people don't get this one, I think that we're just going to have to retire it.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, I think we ought to tell the audience what the word is.
But not now.
That makes it easier for them to win.
But I'll tell you something. I have a lot of architectural friends out there.
You once did that. Remember? You once gave the answer.
Oh, right off the bat. I was so excited about the word, and I gave the word away. But anyway, I have a lot of architectural friends that are listening to this show right now, and I want to hear an answer from them.
Okay, Larry.
Architects, engineers are all invited to come in and answer this question.
Okay, what is the architectural name given to an arch or vault in a thick, heavy wall, which in turn supports a full load of the wall above it and has at least two, not one, but two different sets of arches, especially over a window or a doorway? And many, many large churches like St. Paddy's, I think, has this type of doorway or reveal.
Now, is this structural? Because it looks decorative. You
it
supplied some photographs. And I've seen this in many older buildings.
Yeah, it's both.
It's structural. I think it came from the construction of very thick walls. Like, if you remember the Heidelberg Castle, which had like 4, 5, 6 feet thick walls.
They didn't want to make these big openings in the wall look like a tunnel. So they made a decorative double kind of arches.
And we see them even in some pre-war buildings, pre-World War I buildings, mm-hmm. in New York.
Yes.
I can think of a couple on the West Side.
You can give their names. That won't help people get
remember.
The answer.
I can't remember the names.
It won't help people get the answer.
That building with Petrosian in it, I think, on 6th Avenue.
Yes. Up on 6th Avenue.
Yeah, I know what you're 58th Street or something.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
I can't remember that one.
You see it in churches and other mm-hmm. things. Okay, if you know the answer, the number here is 212-433-9692. And let's take a call. Let's take a call from Thelma from Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Thelma.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show, Mr. Lopez.
That's very nice of you.
We have a ceramic tile kitchen floor,
mm-hmm.
and we have used vinegar and sour salt to clean it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel very comfortable or satisfied with the results. What can you suggest?
Well, is this truly ceramic where it is like has a glaze on it, or it is unglazed?
It's not glazed.
It's not glazed. All right. So that's usually terracotta kind of tile, which is very good for the kitchen, for the floor area and the kitchen area. In fact, that's mm-hmm. what I have in my kitchen. And the staining that takes place as a result of the food, we clean it up the best we can. But over the years, it's gotten darker and darker. And to me, it has gotten more beautiful as a result of this darkness that takes place from the food droppings. This is a natural thing with that kind of terracotta.
You're basically saying there's nothing she can do.
You can, but it is deep into the terracotta, because the terracotta is quite porous, and so what happens is through capillary action, it draws all of that material down deep inside the terracotta, and you can't get it out.
Now, she's putting vinegar on it. That's an acid. Well, isn't that going to etch
it
into
could
it?
Etch, the vinegar could etch it, but
it has affected the grout negatively.
Well, the grout could always be added to by scratching it out with a special tool and adding a new kind of grout. But my feeling is that in this case, less is more.
We thank you for your call. And we'll be taking more calls at 212-433-9692, both with questions for the gurus and also perhaps an answer, if you know the answer, if you're the only person in America who knows the answer to their very tough radio word game quiz, the one that we've been now spending three shows on.
Three shows. My.
Okay, anyway, we'll take a little break. We'll be back with more. We are back with the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Kathy in Manhattan wrote in. She said she lives at the top floor of a 20-story pre-war building. She's having a problem where when she turns on the faucet, there's a 20 to 30-second delay. The building checked for an air block, but that didn't fix it. What could be causing it?
A 20-second delay of just water coming out?
That's what I read, yeah.
Well, that could be, I don't know how high the tank is or whether it's a pressure system. You know, most of these tall buildings have a water tank on the roof, which acts like gravity, and that has to be considerably higher than the penthouse or the top floor of that apartment. The other
way, she's on the 20th floor.
But they that's pretty high up. If there is stories above that, there's probably a pressure tank or a gravity tank, whichever the case may be, that isn't providing enough pressure to that faucet. The average pressure.
What I don't know is whether other people on the 20th floor are having similar problems.
Well, that has to be investigated.
But I just want to interrupt it. I think that probably the problem here is that I'm thinking that it takes 20 minutes for her to get water. Period means that there might be an air blockage at the top of the.
Well, that's
pipes.
What they investigated. They said that there isn't, and it's. Well, 20 seconds.
Well, really?
Two things. If it is the cold water. If it's happening with the cold water, there's probably has to be what is known as an automatic air bleeder valve that has to take the air out of the system at her location so that there is water at her faucet all the time. If there's air there, that has to be a relief. If it's the hot water system, then there's another problem altogether.
This is one of the problems we have when people write in rather than call them because we can't do any follow-up questions. And that's one of the reasons, Larry, you say that when people write to you at your website, that they should leave a phone number because that's the only way you're really going to find out.
Well,
if
it's a simple question, like today someone emailed me from the show early about that she was concerned about the load of the snow on her roof. And that was an easy response, and I didn't really need any follow-up. But a lot of times, a lot of the questions precipitate other questions. And so like this one here. I mean, so definitely if you're going to email me at larry@accuratebuilding.com or larry@ubell.com, always give a telephone number.
And yeah, that's Ubell, U-B-E-L-L.
Yeah, you have to get the – there may be more symptoms than she realizes that she has there, which she's not telling us.
Let's take another call. Max from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, is concrete corrosive to copper pipe? Like where my copper water main comes in from the street down the cellar, they cemented all around that. Someone had told me once that could be corrosive.
The concrete in itself is not corrosive, but sometimes the aggregate that they put in may not be washed aggregate or sand. It may be sand that came from the ocean or something like that, and it has a lot of salt in the sand itself, which is causing accelerated oxidation of the copper piping. Also, sometimes they'll get what they call a sand batch that has iron filings in it from some other location, and the iron filings that touch the copper piping causes what they call electrolytic action or a galvanic action that accelerates the corrosion and the deterioration of the copper pipe.
We thank you for your call. George from Lower Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Leonard? Thanks for taking my call. I live in a landmark tenement building that was built in 1870.
Mm-hmm.
I have a working fireplace, which is very unusual for Manhattan. And I have a lot of problems with it. The fireplace was originally a coal burner, I believe. And it may have even been a gas burner because I see pipes that could have been gas pipes at one time.
Yeah.
It does not have a flue. And my apartment is dusty. And every year I take an old potato sack and I put a camshaft in it and I tie a rope on it and I drop it down the chimney,
mm-hmm.
To try to clean it out. Is there any better way that I could clean it? And also, how do I get rid of the dust in my apartment? It could be that,
well, okay.
You know, I lived in Lower Manhattan and they sand the buildings down there a lot.
Yeah, but here's the situation. There is a better way to clean it. It's called hiring a certified chimney technician or chimney sweep to clean out the chimney. There are people. And what they will do also, when you mean there's no flue, there obviously has to be a flue. How else do you get the smoke from
probably
your fireplace?
No flue liner. Go ahead.
Up the smoke to the outside. But you mean there might not be a liner inside the chimney. And if there is no liner inside the chimney, I would actually recommend heavily not using the fireplace anymore because people don't know this, but the separations between the flues that are not lined and the interior space is only one course of brick. So if there's a leak in the mortar joint or there's a loose brick, the smoke from the heating equipment or from the fireplace can come into the livable space. But if that's the case, the chimney sweep will actually inspect the interior of the chimney with a camera and look all the way down and look for any problems and also, if necessary, put a damper in to make it operate better. As far as the dust is concerned, the dust is probably coming from the inside of the chimney where it's not lined or the inside of the fireplace hearth, which needs to be repointed and repaired. But by all means, a chimney that's being used should be cleaned once a year, every year, without a doubt, by a qualified chimney specialist. And they are certified people. They are licensed, and they have a certification.
Thank you so much for calling us, George. We got a couple of calls on what to do with the snow. Zanda in New York left a comment. She says, I've heard that used coffee grinds can be used on the sidewalk instead of salt. Does that work, and does it cause any problems? I would assume
the coffee grinds only adds frictional resistance.
Like
sand does. Sand is a good thing to just cause frictional resistance. It doesn't melt the snow in any way.
But when you walk on it, you're melting it with the sand makes it easier for you to walk
on it. Just to walk on it. Just adds frictional resistance for walking.
But it also clogs up the storm sewers.
That's what it does.
On another one, another listener wants to know if you put the calcium chloride out before the snow. You've heard that the snow is coming. Will that be just as effective?
Well, but you could use both, either the salt or the calcium chloride, provided the concrete has aged out already. But what we're talking about is by using these chemicals on new concrete sidewalks that have that have been put in, like, in the past 90 days or less, I would not use any of these chemicals until the 90 days have passed. I would shovel the walk best way I can because will come the spring, you're going to start seeing on the surface of that concrete walkway or driveway spalling and chips of the concrete will be starting to disappear and you'll destroy whatever it is. And the concrete guy is going to be blamed for it and he's going to come back and says, you put salt on it, it's your fault.
But the answer to the question about putting the calcium chloride on before the snow falls will sometimes work, especially if you only have a light layer of snow. But if the snow is overwhelming, it's probably not going to solve much of a problem.
We have a few intrepid listeners who've come up with answers for the quiz. The quiz is, what is the architectural name given to an arch or vault in a thick, heavy wall, which in turn supports the full load of the wall above and has at least two different sets of arches, especially over a window or doorway? And
I'm going to give one hint. It helps if you don't speak English.
okay. Marie from Brooklyn, you say it is...
Hi, Leonard. Is it a flying buttress?
A flying buttress is really something, an arch that takes pressure.
It's a supporting arch for a beam inside the building. It is not a supporting section all by itself.
Ah, okay, thanks.
Damn.
And that means that the other callers who said flying buttresses, which they've said in the past shows as well, need not wait for me to give them to go to them, right?
And actually, this is in French, so that would help also. I got to give hints.
Oh, you got to give a hint. Yes.
Okay.
It's
so
French.
Cynthia, it's in French. Do you know the French answer?
I know. I thought it was a rib vault.
You thought it was a rib vault?
Yeah.
No. That sounds good, but is that where they cook the ribs?
It's a
barbecue.
It's a section or two or three barrel vaults, which produces a rib vault or ribbed vault.
Mm. Can I give another hint?
Sure, give whatever
you
want.
I might as well give another hint. Actually, in the English, it would be called a backup vault, but it has to be said in French because that's what the architectural word is.
So, Derek, your answer is not French either, is it?
No, mine was Corbel.
No.
That's not even a good sparkling wine.
And it would...
You're nasty.
And here in Brooklyn, we call it corbling.
You're corbling.
So none of those people got the answer.
No. Do we have another...
No, those are the ones we had so far. Let's take some more calls. Again, our number here is 212-433-9692. Let's see. Who do we want to go to? Gus from Scarsdale. You've been hanging on for a while. Hi.
Hi. I've got an unfinished basement with in the ceiling, aluminum hot air ducts.
Right.
Can I insulate those? Is it worth it? And how would I go about doing that?
Well, yes, it is. It is. It does pay to insulate it, especially in an unheated basement. They do make fiberglass panels that can be applied to the exterior of it. But before you,
but don't they just make sleeves that you can slide right on?
Well, it's hard. It's because it's already tied to the ceiling or the wall, okay, or something like that. Mm. But what insulation does around the ductwork, it cuts down the noise of the air going through the ductwork. It also prevents, if you're using it for air conditioning, it prevents the ductwork from condensating on the outside and dripping down. And in the heating, it directs the heat from the diffuser into the right area rather than be dissipated from the sides of the ductwork.
But I also want to say that it is very important before you start insulating them that you get duct tape or whatever other tape there that's used for, usually duct tape for closing up ducts, and try to find all the leaks and try to seal those leaks up first. I mean,
that would be good.
Close to about 30% of your heat is actually lost in forced air systems through leaks in the ductwork. So really, you should go around the whole – before even bothering with insulating, you should determine whether you have leaks. And also something, before you start insulating the ducts, some of the ductwork actually sometimes has insulation on the inside. And so if they built the duct actually is insulation on the inside, then aluminum around the outside. So you want to make sure that you're not insulating it twice because you're not really going to get that much heat difference. So feel the outside of the duct when the heating system is on and feel how warm it is. If it's not that warm, it might already be insulated. Okay,
thanks for calling.
That's true.
Dina, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Leonard. I should say, je ne parle pas français, but you probably couldn't. I couldn't even say that correctly.
Yes.
Actually, I'm calling about a hot water heater replacement.
Yes.
We've twice now, the bottom of our hot water heater has fallen out, you know, without any leakage or notice ahead of time. And so we thought that the hot water heater we have now was put in by this builder in a different house.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 years old, and we were thinking, well, the others lasted about 10 years, and maybe we should replace it. And I was wondering, other than energy usage, which I know the hot water heaters have signs on them telling you about the energy mm-hmm. usage, what should we look for in a hot water heater, number one? And should we drain it every month? I did that with our others, and then it always leaked where I drained it, so that didn't help me very much. And I'm also interested in knowing about a tankless hot water heater.
Fine. Well, first of all, as far as I like your, you're right, they only last about 10 years. I actually was able to get about 12 years out of my, actually not even 12, probably about 11 and a half years out of mine. One of the things that actually helps it last longer is if you put a jumper between the hot and cold water outputs of use number 8 wire, and you put this jumper across with two clamps. That actually increases the life of the water heater. But as far as what you should look for, I'm a big fan of the higher end manufacturers like A.O. Smith and Rheem, brands that you've known, and they tend to – I've never had a bottom fallout. I've already been through 3 water heaters, and I've never had a bottom fallout. I usually have – what happens is I get a small leak on the interior, and I see a small puddle, and then I shut it off and replace it. So I don't see that as – you know, with the lesser quality water heaters, I could see the bottom dropping out. As far as the tankless water heaters are concerned, I'm still not sold on the tankless water heaters. I know my friend Fabio out there loves to email me about how I'm a dilettante and I don't understand anything because I live here in the United States, but I don't like them because the cost of replacement is high. The calcification of them has been a problem. Even if you look at the Consumer Reports, they're not thrilled with them. I'd still go, if you have the room, go with the traditional freestanding water heaters.
And giving out this kind of advice is a tankless task.
It's a tankless task.
Yeah. Okay. You're
right. You waited a long time.
Yeah, you saw my lips moving.
I know you're chomping at the bit. I want to talk.
We have another suggested answer to the quiz. Yes. Annalise from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
What's the answer?
Wait.
Annalise, are you
Hello?
There?
Yes.
This is Miriam from Jolie's Architect from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Hi, and bonjour.
Bonjour.
The answer would be voussoir or arche de reprise.
I got to give it.
She got it.
Actually, what is the word we're looking for?
Voussoir.
I have to tell you, my husband is the architect. He's the expert in LPC work here.
Yeah.
In NYC, but he has his degree also from Paris. He has his DPLG. So that's why he told me, oh, if he's French, he's voussoir. So and he was too shy to speak on the radio. So je lui ai dit, je vais parler à la place.
That's great. Anyway,
and thank you for putting us out of our misery.
Yes.
So, you're welcome. Thank you, Leonard, for your show.
Wait, don't hang up.
I don't hang up.
You win a prize.
And the book
Save Energy, Save Money.
Save Money by Alvin Ubel and George Morales.
Merci beaucoup.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold.
Yes, sir.
And my producer will take your number and address and whatever, and then Alvin and Larry will send you the book, okay?
Thank you, Leonard. Your show is extraordinaire. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And a reminder that we couldn't get to all the calls, but people can get in touch with you, Larry.
At larry@ubel.com or larry@accuratebuilding.com. Please include your telephone number. And you can also follow me on Twitter at, twitter.com/LarryUbel, no spaces.
But
also,
you have to remember that you spell Ubel, U-B-E-L-L, because people send in all sorts of weird spellings.
Yes, and also there's a newsletter that we publish.
The
Gotham City Inspector. It's the latest issue. All you have to do is type in on Google or any other search engine, the Gotham City Inspector, and it'll come up, and you'll see all of the back issues. It has a great deal of information about how to take care of your home.
And Al and Larry Ubel will be back on our show on Wednesday, March 10th. When?
When we can all show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.